I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, another installment of Tube Talk.
The largest investigation of voter impersonation ever found just 31 incidents out of a billion ballots cast. By the way, 31 out of a billion is also my current Yelp review for the Trump administration.
As long as she knows that a vote for Trump is a vote for racism.
President Obama said America would accept 1,200 refugees. Your country's compassion will not be forgotten.
No refugees. America first. Australia sucks. Your reef is failing. Prepare to go to war.
It is my job to deliver a world where the values that I raised you to believe in matter. And they didn't. They didn't. I mean, half of our country rejected them.
TV takes on Trump. Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Crimple join me for Tube Talk. First, the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody, on this Blizzard Thursday edition of Midday. We had a Baltimore-style blizzard. That's a blizzard that doesn't include any snow. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad to have you with us. And we want to give a special thanks out to everybody who came to the terrific event at the Mount Vernon
Marketplace
last night to support WIPR. We want to give a special shout-out to our man Chino, who is the proprietor of Pinch Dumplings, and the Midday team was slinging drinks with Chino, and he was a very terrific bartender teacher and a terrific colleague. He did keep us on point. He kept us going. And so my guest today, Bridget Armstrong, was there, as was Jamila Crimple. Welcome to you both today.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
And Jamila, you have a birthday today. You're spending your birthday with us.
Yes,
so that's
no better way.
Terrific. So happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Everybody saying happy birthday, dear Jamila.
Happy birthday to you.
There you go.
Thank you.
So,
and thanks, Mom.
There you go. Thanks, Mom. Indeed. Thanks very much to Mom. So we've got lots to celebrate today. And we're going to have our latest installment of Tube Talk by day. Jamila and Bridget are producers here at WIPR, but by night they are skilled prowlers of the channel guides, picking the winners and losers with a supernatural aplomb. It's very, very impressive. So let's talk about first television and its take on Donald Trump. I mean, it has really been quite extraordinary, not just the comedy shows. It's comedy shows, or not just the like the sketch comedy shows, the places you'd expect it, like SNL and Colbert and, you know, all those folks, but also even just in narrative shows. So I don't know, Bridget, what do you think? I mean, is SNL sort of, again, leading the pack when it comes to Trump takedowns?
I think they are. And I mean, for me, I was not an SNL fan. Never have been. I'm like, oh, it's not funny. It must have been funny like sometime before I was born or something like that. But I think with all of this material, and it's like, you know, everyone's upset and they're seeing it as a negative thing, it's a positive thing for SNL. Of course, we've seen Alec Baldwin doing his Trump character for a long time, and it's really funny. Donald Trump tweeted about it. He hates it, which makes it funnier, you know. But I think they are kind of leading the pack with that. We saw Melissa McCarthy over the weekend play Sean Spicer, which was hilarious. And I don't know what we'll see. I mean, there have been rumors that Rosie O'Donnell may come on as Steve Bannon. I don't know.
The Hollywood Reporter is actually saying that Rosie O'Donnell has pitched herself to play Steve Bannon.
She's
behind that.
Yeah, there was a tweet, I'm paraphrasing, she said, I'm ready to enlist or something like that. If I'm called, I will serve. That's what she said. Yeah.
And, you know, as much as the president is disconcerted by, you know, his depictions on SNL, the ratings have never been better for that show. They're the best in 20-something years, something like that. I mean, it's really quite something.
Yeah. And I am the opposite of Bridget. I have been a fan of SNL for the longest time, and I feel like the past season has been a little weak. I feel like they haven't known what to do with covering Trump, unless Alec Baldwin wasn't in town. If he wasn't available to play Trump, I think they were sort of struggling to figure out, how do we cover this? How do we make it funny?
Yeah,
I think they're finding their footing, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Here's a little bit of Mr. Baldwin.
Let's call Mexico. I figured out a smart diplomatic way to get them to pay for this wall.
Hola, Presidente Nieto.
Guy who's gonna pay for the wall says what?
Okay.
No, guy who's gonna pay for the wall says what?
Okay.
No, no. You have to say what?
You said what? You're going to pay for the wall.
No way. You're paying, loser. You're bad hombre. Here come our tanks. Prepare to go to war.
Yeah, prepare to go to war was a theme of that that little yes. skit. Of course, but SNL did pick up their game because not only did they have Baldwin in the beginning mm-hmm. of the show, but in the middle of the show, they enlisted Melissa McCarthy
yes.
to play Sean Spicer.
Yes, and
she that took off.
Hit it out of the park. And the best part for me was I think it took maybe 10 seconds after she came out for people to realize it was her. There was like this low level of like laughter. And then I think once they focused on her physical presentation that was pretty much spot on. She had the hairline that started back a little bit and just the way she carried herself. And then the laughter, as you'll hear, it erupts.
Let's take a little listen. This is Melissa McCarthy playing Sean Spicer, the press spokesman for the Trump administration.
As you know, President Trump announced his Supreme Court pick on the national TV today. When he entered the room, the crowd greeted him with a standing ovation, which lasted a full 15 minutes. And you can check the tape on that. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was happy. The men all had erections. And every single one of the women was ovulating left and right. And no one was sad.
No one was sad, yes. right? And certainly the producers of SNL and the folks at NBC are not sad because their ratings are knocking it out of the park. And it's interesting. The Huffington Post said that it quoted a donor, an anonymous donor, a donor they did not name, who said that Trump doesn't like his people to look weak. So, Bridget, it sounds like there's some information coming from inside the administration that says that the president was upset because Mr. Spicer was portrayed by a woman.
Right. And we know that the president was upset about Alec Baldwin. But yes, like you said, it's reported that he's more upset about the Spicer situation. And I think that may have to do with some things before this, the president not really being happy with his performance, and then it being kind of portrayed by Melissa McCarthy. And although, of course, it's over the top, it's kind of spot on. I mean, if you've watched these press conferences, there is a level of contempt between Spicer and the press.
And aggression.
And I think she nailed it. Of course, it was over the top, but it's getting at something that is true, which is, you know, the best part of all of this. Mm-hmm. It's getting at things that I think people are already thinking and already talking about. They make it over the top. They make it funny. But we're laughing, I guess, to not cry. I don't know. People are laughing to not cry or to, you know, not feel the pain of what's going on.
Yeah, and in Mr. Spicer's defense, I mean, it has also been reported that he has done some things in the last week or two to reach out to the press, things like calling people to wish them happy birthday, you know, something I would never stoop to do on the air here. But just trying to play nice, and I think with a tacit understanding that he's gotten off to kind of a rough start.
Yeah, you know. And but, he's, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. He told Fox and Friends that he thought that the impersonation was cute and it was funny, but then he quickly segued and said, I'd much rather be talking about the issues and what President Trump wants to do for the country. So it seems like he might have a better sense of humor than his boss.
I read something that suggested that they continue this trend and have women play all of the cabinet members and all of the members of the Trump administration. I think that's a great idea. I think it'll be really funny. And I mean, it gets at this idea of, I guess, appearing weak, this idea that Trump feels like, okay, if he has a woman play, it makes them weak. But when they nail the performance, when they nail the impersonation, you know, it kind of, I guess, puts a slap in the face that, like, women can do anything. It doesn't make you look weak, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got Kate McKinnon playing Justin Bieber all the time.
Right?
I mean, it certainly goes the other way. I mean, constantly. You know? But it would be interesting to say. I'd love to see Leslie Jones play Trump, but I don't know if they could do, colorblind casting. If she could be convincing as Trump.
Well, she could do the alter ego like a couple of years ago, a couple seasons ago. The Rock played The Rock Obama, and he was the whole setup was that Barack Obama was very calm, was very mild. Even we would never see him sweat. But inside of him was living this bodybuilder who would burst out of his shirts like the Hulk. And he would sick the Barack Obama on his critics. So maybe we'll see course, that person.
Key and Peele like famously had the inner Obama and stuff. So we've got all sorts of great ideas for Saturday Night Live. We should,
we
should just join the writing room. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Jemila Krempel and Bridget Armstrong join me for Tube Talk. We're talking about television and its treatment of Trump so far. If you have ideas and opinions about that, we'd love to hear you. Again, the number 410-662-8780. Before we go to some of the other comedy shows that are taking on, like Colbert, and his ratings are up, and Seth Meyers, people are saying he's coming into his own. I do want to get to that, but I want to talk for a second about Lady Gaga and Super Bowl I forget, because I thought it was a terrific show. Bridget, what was your reaction?
I think Lady Gaga is just the type of performer that you want to do something like the Super Bowl. There was a petition before to have some Atlanta rappers, and some of them are really good rappers, to do the performance. And, I could understand, but I don't
because
think they
Atlanta
were,
was playing
Atlanta,
in the game.
Of course, it's in Atlanta. Atlanta's a hub of hip-hop. Atlanta was playing the game, and, Atlanta's a hub of hip-hop. But I think Lady Gaga has this theatric appeal to her. Mm-hmm. Everything she does, we remember the performances with the crazy costumes. Mm-hmm. And I think this was right up her alley. She did a great job. She sounded good. She didn't disappoint at all. I think people were tuning in though and expecting her to say something political or something to that nature. Mm-hmm. And she didn't do that. I think her performance did.
Yeah, she started with God Bless America.
Right, she did. But I think her performance, it was very multicultural. There were lots of different types of people there. And I think that was a statement, especially, in this time where we're feeling like people are being left out or being marginalized. And I don't know if that was her way of making a political statement or if I'm just reading into it too much.
Right.
But I thought it was a great performance. I wasn't disappointed. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Her ratings were better than the ratings for the game. She drew four million more people at the halftime show than the game did. And the game is down from last year and down from, it's like the fifth or sixth highest Super Bowl audience in general. And the other problem that Fox had was that after the game, the show that they were hyping and hoping to a big lead in, this 24 Legacy, which is a sort of sequel to 24, didn't do very well because the game went longer than people expected because it went into overtime. Mm-hmm. I heard one person say, I guess it was maybe David Green on NPR, who said, for once, the game was better than the commercials. and it sort of overshadowed both Lady Gaga and the commercials. But Jemila, what did you think of her performance?
I thought it didn't disappoint. I'm not much of a Lady Gaga fan. I can appreciate, her talents, all of them, the dancing and the singing. But I was definitely not disappointed. I thought even though she didn't make any sort of statements, she didn't do anything unusual for what we've known her to be, I felt that her choice of song selection and just her maybe her dancers and just the whole package did make sort of a statement. She sung one song, Born This Way, and I can't remember the lyrics, but it's something like, if you're lesbian, transgender, gay, or bi, I'm on the right track. I'm born this way. I think that is somewhat of a political statement because she has plenty of other hits that she could have played, but she wanted to make sure that on that stage, being viewed by millions of people, that, it was an inclusive message. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was good. She went after she jumped off of that stage, I still don't know. I don't think people have heard from her since, but I think she's okay.
Well, I guess TMZ is reporting that the part that where she jumped was pre-taped.
I could see that.
I mean, I don't know if that's there. We haven't confirmed that, but so the jumping part was pre-taped.
Uh-huh.
But then she started her descent, from the roof and stuff
that makes sense.
Then it became live.
So maybe she'll call in and let us know.
Maybe she'll call in. But I think what struck me was that she's an excellent performer. She sings in tune. I mean, as a person who conducts singers, this is a sticking point with me, with a lot of pop singers in particular, but she's an excellent singer. She's not a great songwriter. I mean, I thought the problem was the material was just not great. Like when Paul McCartney just stood up there and played the guitar and sang and then jumped to the piano and sang, it was great. It didn't have to be flashy because the tunes were so iconic, you know. Mm. But that one tune must have been a million reasons.
Yeah.
That was the only good song in it, I thought. I mean, the only great song. I mean, I thought that was a really substantial pop tune, the million reasons song. The rest, you know, the songs weren't great, but she certainly knows how to sell. She could sell yesterday's newspaper. She's very good. And she didn't wear the meat costume. And
she
I was happy about that.
I think she's moved on.
I'm happy that we had a meatless Sunday Super Bowl. Yeah. That was good. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and get your thoughts and questions and comments for our tenacious tube talkers, Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Stick around.
You're tuned to Midday here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. It's Tube Talk. We've got Jamila Krempel. She's a digital producer here at WYPR. And Bridget Armstrong, she is a producer on this very program, Midday. They join me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us, too, to talk about what you've seen recently on the Tube that you have really liked and can recommend. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle, if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So let's talk about some of the other late night personalities who've also profited somewhat. I'm not saying financially profited, but their shows in terms of the material that the current administration is presenting to them. Trevor Noah, who you know has taken over now from Jon Stewart for about a year and a half,
I guess. Since 2015, yeah. Since late 2015.
He had a very interesting exchange with a person named Tommy Lahren.
Tommy Lahren,
Bridget,
yes.
Explain who that is before we hear a little clip.
So Tommy Lahren is a conservative commentator. She works for The Blaze. Before that, I think she was with another online-based network. Her speeches, she does these sort of speeches or monologues on different topics. She took on Colin Kaepernick when he decided to kneel during the national anthem. She's taken on anti-Trump supporters. And she does these little videos, and they go viral, and they're shared everywhere on Facebook. She's relatively young, like in her mid-20s, and she, I guess they characterize her as being able to, I guess, verbalize the feelings that Trump supporters have about different issues in a way that sometimes they can't. So I guess she's a voice of the conservative right. Her, I guess, opponents have also called her alt-right Barbie, I think is one of the terms they use. But she was a guest on Trevor Noah's show.
Let's listen to a little clip of that exchange.
Why would you take out your perceived oppression of black people out on the national anthem and our flag? A country that you live in, a country that you benefit from, a country that people of all races have died for, have died to protect, have died for the vote, died to be enfranchised by this nation. How do you then go and disrespect the flag and the anthem of that country? Why is that the outlet?
Well, maybe you're a person who's lived and read through history and you realize that a lot of those people of every color who died for this country, some of them didn't have the rights that their fellow servicemen had when they came back to the country after fighting.
And that flag means a lot to those folks, too.
Maybe you're one of those people who realizes that the penal system in America was designed to oppress black people. It was designed to enslave people. It is a relic of slavery. Maybe you're one of those people. So what I don't understand is a guy is kneeling in the corner. I don't understand why that offends you so much.
So, Jamila, here's a guy who's, you know, doing what the internet would call a takedown.
Right.
You know, he's taking down this young woman, Tommy Lahren. And a lot of people on the left are looking to the comedians for the arguments.
Right.
For what they say at the dinner party when they run into a person who voted for Mr. Trump. It's interesting how they...
It is. And you're right. I think it was a takedown, but not in the traditional sense that we see it. He wasn't aggressive with her. His tactic was very much to let her speak and give her an opportunity to, you know, share her beliefs and speak on behalf of her constituency, I guess you could say. But he really kind of sat back and was just very gentle with her. And a lot of his fans took issue with that. They said, you should have went in harder. You should have really sticked it to her. And I don't think that that's that's the approach that obviously he thought was best. I think he figured, give her this opportunity to speak to an audience that she doesn't usually engage with. And, you know, I'm not making a judgment on where her beliefs or where she stands, but sort of let her take down herself, I think, was ultimately what happened.
When people complain about when people on the political right complain about the press coverage of Trump, they say it's unfair. And the press counters usually by saying, well, we're just reporting what he says,
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And Trevor Noah is a very smart guy. I mean, mm-hmm. he speaks, what, six languages
yeah.
or something
mm-hmm.
like that. He's had a very interesting life growing up in apartheid South Africa. Mm-hmm. He's taken over one of the toughest gigs in broadcasting that anyone can imagine because Stewart was so revered. But I think he's doing really well. I mean, I don't watch him regularly, but Bridget, do you pay attention pretty closely? I mean, how's he doing?
I've been paying attention to Trevor Noah. I think he's doing okay. And I think this interview with Tommy Lahren, though, kind of signified a change. I think he's been doing better since then. And that interview went viral. It was everywhere. And it was a big deal for him because since he took over in 2015, I don't think the show has gotten a lot of traction. I don't think the mm-hmm. ratings are as high as they used to be when Jon Stewart was hosting the show. I think he's been trying to find his footing and find his place. And I think with this Tommy Lahren interview, he found that because, as Jamila said, one of the criticisms of him is that he is not American enough to do this job. He's not mm-hmm. American enough to be speaking about, you know, politics, and he doesn't understand the context. But in this point, I think because in that clip, you hear her talking about, you know, Colin Kaepernick should not have kneeled. He asked before that, and we didn't hear it in the clip, well, what should he have done? And I'm asking genuinely. He said, I'm not trying to challenge you. I really want to know because I hear this argument. What should a person do when they want to protest something? And she didn't have an answer. And because Trevor Noah is kind of outside a little bit of our political discourse, he could say and be genuine about, I don't know the answer to this question mm-hmm. that you all argue about. And it kind of sets him up to be, I guess, not an outsider on it and allow people to just say what they say and allow them to kind of paint their picture and you make your own judgments. But it does kind of put him in a place where he can ask questions and be and get answers from people, and people don't necessarily feel like he's trying to lead them to something. Or, you know,
Bridget Armstrong is a producer here at Midday and a close observer of the scene on TV. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer here at WIPR. She is also a close observer of the small screen. You can join our conversation 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Jerry, you've been patient. I appreciate it. Welcome to Midday with Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. 2 points. Trump and Trevor Noah. Trump has been the best thing for media and cable that has ever come along. That's why early on they started broadcasting him 24/7. The reason being, they all know, and I think you will agree, no normal person other than a comedian would act and say the outlandish and outrageous things he is saying. Trump has comedic timing.
Well, Jerry, I don't know about that. 60 million people voted for him and wished that they had been the ones who'd said many of the things that President Trump has said, both on the campaign trail and then in office. But, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you that his comedic timing is quite something. I mean, he was covered wall-to-wall on cable television, partially because, you know, people have accused him of being a carnival barker. And carnival barkers, their job is to attract a crowd. And he attracted huge ratings for CNN and Fox and for everybody.
How many ratings would he have attracted if they didn't cover him 24/7? You know, if you haven't noticed, I really think the country is getting a bit of Trump fatigue. But getting to Trevor Noah, I agree. He is finding his own here. But his best points are when he compares this administration to something that he really knows, African dictatorships. Look at what's going on in South Africa today with 400 troops being brought into the capital, not ceremoniously, but to guard the president. And I think we're going to find similar tactics here. And thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. You know, it is interesting, I think, to have what we have on television now, a variety of perspectives. Trevor Noah is still the only person of color doing a late night show. I mean, is he not? I mean,
when you think about,
you know, Jimmy Fallon, James Corden and Seth Meyers, who are the late versions on CBS and NBC. You've got Stephen Colbert. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they find their moments. I mean, you mentioned the moment of Trevor Noah with Tommy Lahren. It seems that Colbert has found his moment as well with Trump, as has Seth Meyers. New York Times did a piece on Seth Meyers a week or so ago, basically saying that his interview with Kellyanne Conway, in which he pressed back, you know, pushed back pretty forcefully, really established him and got him in his group. Let's listen to a little of Colbert, whose ratings are considerably better than they were a few months ago.
Even though Donald Trump says 3 million people voted for Clinton illegally so far, in the 2016 election, there were just 4 documented cases of voter fraud. Okay, could be 4. Could be 3 million. Okay, let's split the difference right here and just see what we can do here. 4 times plus and divided, and that adds up to... still bull. All right.
So he has apparently come into his own, Bridget. I mean, he's had a week or so where he actually exceeded the ratings for Jimmy Fallon. That's the first time that's happened since he went on the air.
Since he took over, exactly. I think Jimmy Fallon still leads among younger people, supposedly, but overall, right. Colbert has found his footing. And I don't know if it was because people were used to him in character,
right.
And when he, you know, stopped doing the character to host the late show, I don't know if that didn't translate well. I don't really know what was going on, but he seems to have found his footing. And his criticisms of Trump, I mean, of course, when we see SNL and some of these other shows, they're satirical and it's funny. His are too, but I think they're a lot more pointed. I mean, I think they're very sharp, and he's saying things that I think people want to hear on TV. People who are non-Trump supporters want to hear, and I don't know if that is why more people are tuning in. I don't know if something happens every day, and so then they want to hear, well, what's Colbert's take on this today? I don't know if that speaks to it. It could be the fact that, you know, the president seems to roll out executive orders, you know, every other day or something like that. That's driving it. But he's finding his way too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Seth Meyers did a thing. Kellyanne Conway had complained that the press was only covering the executive order having to do with the travel ban, and
right.
that she wished that it would cover more things. So he did a big takedown of the hiring freeze, the federal hiring freeze,
right.
In which it's predicted that a large sector who will really hurt from that are veterans, because the Veterans Administration needs more people, and there's a freeze, they can't hire them, and veterans themselves are given preferential treatment in hiring by the federal government,
right.
so they could have their thing. So it's interesting, you know, when people come up with ways of sort of, you know, taking them up on their offers, you know,
right.
And doing it. But there are very few, if any, other than Trevor Noah, people of color doing the comedic ones. I mean,
right.
People point to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who does a thing about astronomy on National Geographic, or Tavis Smiley, you know, who's on PBS.
Sure.
But those are not considered late-night comedians,
no, right.
obviously. There are even fewer women.
Right? Absolutely.
Samantha Bee being a person who has really taken hold. She's got a big, big following for this show, Full Frontal, which I have seen a bunch of times, you know, on demand. And she has come up with the idea to have an alternative to the White House Correspondents' Dinner,
right.
which is scheduled to take place in April. What can you tell us about that, Jamal?
So she is going to be doing a roast, I guess is the best way to describe it. And I think that's really interesting, because I wonder if she would be invited to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Because oftentimes there's comedians, obviously there's journalists, but I wonder what the representation from the media is going to be. So maybe she just figured either I'm not going to be invited or I don't want to go, so I'm going to create my own thing. But I have been watching her more as of late because it's interesting what she does. She's on TBS, right?
Yep.
I don't even know what channel TBS is on my cable system. So I started following her on Facebook, and I'll get her updates and her monologues, her opening monologues. So that's kind of how I keep track of what she's talking about. And I think she captures some people's exasperation and, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And, you know, a pretty scathing critique of what's happening. So I think I would definitely love to see more women like herself in these positions.
Yeah,
for these
and
shows.
And like John Oliver on HBO, she's only on once a week. So mm-hmm. she doesn't have to push, you know, push out five shows a week like Colbert and Fallon and Seth Meyers have to do. So she's got the writing is very smart.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really quite something. But it looks like, Bridget, there are a whole bunch of people already saying they're not going to come to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Didn't Vanity Fair already announced they've canceled their contingent? I mean, so who knows what this is a party that's scheduled for April,
right?
You know, so who knows what's
going to
happen.
It's going to be very funny if all the comedians are sitting out.
Yeah, right. And there are a bunch of Hollywood stars that may not want to come. Right. So it's not just the late night comedians who are taking up the Trump administration. There's this show that I've only seen a couple of episodes of, but I take it you guys are both fans, called Black-ish.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about Black-ish, Bridget.
So Black-ish, we've talked about it, I think, the last time too, but Black-ish is both one of our favorite shows that comes on ABC. It's like a comedy sitcom. It's about a family living in the suburbs, a black family living in the suburbs, who are, I guess, affluent, and they're trying to, you know, the premise is the idea that the parents who did not grow up in the same way are trying to keep their kids on the right track and make them black enough,
right.
especially the father, Andre.
Yeah.
So I think you...
Yeah, let's listen to a little clip.
Yeah.
Black people wake up every day believing that our lives are going to change, even though everything around us says it's not. Truth be told, you ask most black people and they tell you that no matter who won this election, they didn't expect the hood to get better.
Strange fruit.
But they still voted because that's what you're supposed to do. You think I'm not sad that Hillary didn't win? That I'm not terrified about what Trump's about to do? I'm used to things not going my way. I'm sorry that you're not, and it's blowing your mind. So excuse me if I get a little offended because I didn't see all of this outrage when everything was happening to all of my people since we were stuffed on boats in chains.
Take our word for it.
Right.
It's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
Yeah, right.
That's not a great example. That wasn't funny at
right.
all.
But there are other funny moments in that episode. Is it okay if I give this the setup? So what we heard was Dre, one of the parents in the show, he works for an advertising agency, and he is one of three black employees at this advertising agency, and he has a boss who is pretty racist, but in a way that's like a caricature racist.
Right.
And so they're sitting around this table, and it's the day after the election, and they're all really upset. They're all really sad.
Well, some of them were Trump voters,
too.
So they're kind of having that, I guess, the discussion a lot of people probably had the next day at work.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of that.
You're right.
Yeah.
There was a female employee, coworker of his,
right.
that voted for Trump, and she was sort of no one expected that from her, and so she had to defend her position, and the conversation gets pretty heated, and one of his coworkers says, I can't believe you're not more upset. I can't believe you're not mad. You should be more mad. And so it's him saying, oh, I'm mad, but I'm used to this. This is sort of a wake-up call for all of you. So in the somewhat rare, serious moments of the series, this is one of them.
And it's interesting because in watching that episode, I thought there were a lot of things that worked. But because I think we're used to seeing Dre's character be so funny, that switch to that very serious monologue.
With Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit playing as the bit.
When I watched the show, honestly, it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But in pulling this clip for the show, when I listened to it by itself, I'm like, wow, this is a really powerful monologue.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that, even though it kind of doesn't work because the show is supposed to be funny and it's kind of like an awkward moment, it stands alone, and I think it's kind of a tribute to the writers who maybe, I don't know, wrote from how they felt. I don't know, but it really resonated.
Well, it was a conversation that a lot of people had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots of black folks after this election said to the white folks who were just amazed that, you know, something like this could happen, said, welcome to my world.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is something that is not a new experience to people of color,
mm-hmm.
but it was a very new experience, evidently, to a lot of people, a lot of white people in this country.
Right.
You know, how did all these women vote for Trump? I mean, they couldn't wrap their arms around it.
Sure.
And Black-ish, you know, here's this comedy that has this this pulpit, whether it's a bully pulpit or a regular pulpit. Mm-hmm. And they chose in pretty short order because, I mean, obviously these shows are usually taped months and months
yeah,
in advance.
Right.
They managed to come up with this, you know, not too far from the election.
Right? Well, I looked it up, and according to Vulture, the showrunner, Kenya Barris, he started writing this episode the day after the election, and they started taping it over the holiday, over Christmas break. So he turned this around pretty quickly.
Really quickly.
Right. Yeah.
But clearly, you know, they're not going to shy away from it. They want to take
sure.
up these. And these are, you know, I think this show resonates with so many people, black and white, because mm-hmm. it's real. I mean, there mm-hmm. are, these are the conversations that people are really having.
Right.
Just got a few minutes left. I want to go quickly to the phones. Ted in Reisterstown, welcome to Midday.
Good morning or good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. 2 points. The vehicle that satire provides, I think, in its sort of micro encapsulation, where you've got snippets of Seth Meyers and snippets of John Oliver and snippets of Trevor Noah popping up in the midst of all of these news stories. I think that the reaction that you get from Donald Trump and some of his spokespeople based on and Saturday Night Live repeatedly being in the news and then Trump rising to the bait. I think that satire is helping illustrate the instability or the mercurial nature of our current president. So that's one thing. And I'm woefully under TV watched on some of the shows that you've been bringing up. But the other side of this in television is just the fact that somehow in the last 2 months, the news networks have found their spine, and even Fox News is flat out telling the president to his face, like the Bill O'Reilly interview, Mr. President, you have to have data to support 3 million
right.
illegal votes.
Right. Well, you know, in terms of the media finding its spine, that's something that I think a lot of folks in this business are grappling with. But, Ted, I appreciate that call. So, Jamila and Bridget, before we go, I want to mention real quickly, BET has a biopic about New Edition, this boy band.
Nothing to do with Trump.
Yeah, nothing to do with Trump.
This
is now for something completely different. So we got about a minute left, but this was an African-American boy band at the time that, you know, all these white boy bands,
right?
You know, in the 80s and 90s. What's it like?
To me, that was the best thing on TV in 2017 so far. I don't think Jamila agrees with me all the way, but I loved it. New Edition was very popular, I say, for black women around the age of 35 to 45. It's a very mm-hmm. specific group. But the one thing about this biopic, they had all of the members involved in the process of making the story. And so it's real. They've all come out. Usually we have a biopic. People come, oh, that's not true. You know, they've lied. They're all coming forward and they're saying it's true. They found out things about each other that they didn't know, certain beefs or resentments that they had. It was a great movie.
So this
really
is playing
fun.
Out in real time.
It's playing out. It was a 3-night event. It was great. Everyone on Twitter was talking about it. I had fun watching it.
Huge ratings.
Huge ratings.
Highest
yes,
rated thing on BET,
on BET
ever.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Jamila,
maybe
what's your
because
take?
Of the Trump fatigue, as Jerry said, people wanted to kind of see something else, something more lighthearted,
right.
and the
something
dancing and singing.
His name,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I watched all of it. It was entertaining, but it should not have been nominated. I don't think it'll get nominated for a Golden Globe or an Emmy.
Or a Golden Globe, yeah. Right.
And that is, they're stealing it from them. That
right.
is a shame. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm glad we can end on that note
right.
of comedy here. All right. Bridget Armstrong, Jamila Krempel, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Now get back to work.
Right away.
All right. Bridget Armstrong produces our show here on Midday. Jamila Krempel is a digital producer for WIPR. We've got links and information about the shows we talked about today at wipr.org/Midday. Coming up after a quick break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of Great Expectations at the Everyman Theater. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.